You're listening to Money Making Mothers with Carla Edwards, where we discuss the highs and lows of being a working parent, how to master the art of spinning plates, and remind ourselves that just because you became a mother does not mean your dreams no longer exist. You can have it all.
Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Money Making Mothers, and this week I am actually joined by my real life in sport, who is Michaela Wayne. She was a finalist on the BBC Apprentice series, and she is actual goals. Honestly, what she has achieved in such a short space of time, also being a mother of two, growing businesses in construction, marketing, I love her. I love everything about her and I love everything she does. So I hope you all agree and feel the same way.
Hello. I would just introduce myself. Can you edit this down? Hopefully. My name is Michaela Wayne. My name is Michaela Wayne. I run several companies within the construction industry. I am a mother of two, one who has just turned two and an 11-year-old. And hopefully we're going to be able to give you some tips on not losing your shit, manage you both.
Thank you so much for coming on today. I know how busy you are, like mental busy all the time. So I really appreciate you coming on, because I know, like, just on a personal level, genuinely, you massively inspired me, especially when you were on The Apprentice. Like, I'd watch you and be like, she is mint. Like, she's proper class. Honestly, I was proper. You were my absolute fave in that. So it means a lot that you've come on today. So firstly, I want to know, I know it'd be quite hard to like get pinpoint, but why do you do what you do? Like, how did it all start and to be where you are now?
It's all about the money. Construction is a mega industry with absolutely tons of money. There's always people being born. Everybody needs somewhere to work, to shop, to eat, to live. There's always going to be construction going on. However, that aside, it wasn't my dream as a child. I wanted to be an RE teacher.
No so way.
I did religion and special needs at university. I wanted to be like an RE teacher / counsellor. I wanted to basically help young girls who might have suffered some kind of trauma in their life. And also instill morals in people without breathing down the neck. And I think that religion and the special needs course that I was doing would have done that. However, I couldn't handle being a skint student. So I went and got a job and fell into this industry, really. It was an accident. I was just working for somebody else, selling magazine adverts. And over the course of time, I realised that I was earning this company mega money. And I was very good at what I did. So I just I took the plunge, actually, after I'd had my first son. I was 25. My son was 5 months old and I'd hit a glass ceiling. I just couldn't get promoted. They basically told me that they wanted an older man, which they did employ, and then asked me to train. And so it was just... it was the nail in the coffin. So I just thought, you know what? I was going home every night to my son after working for somebody else and getting a cut of things. And I just thought, I can do this myself so much better. So I just decided, and the next day, stupidly or bravely, I don't know which it was, just handed him a notice and flew on my own, and here I am.
So what did you when you first initially started, what did you start, like, what was the business, what did you think it was going to turn into?
So I started my own magazine, a construction magazine. So obviously I had a lot of connections. I've been doing it for about 5 years. I would always say to anybody who wants to start their own company, get experience in your industry, definitely. To understand the ups and downs of your industry, understanding this month will be good, this won't, getting the connections, having contacts, it's all going to help. I didn't know anything about business, better if you do, because I really messed up a lot along the way. But I think I forgot, what was your question, Carl?
Like, how did you get to where you are now? How did you start to become, it's obviously bigger than just a magazine now, isn't it?
Yeah, so basically the magazine was doing well. We were selling adverts in magazines, selling subscriptions. We grew our readership over the course of a couple of years. So it's now at just short of 300,000. In the earlier days, say it was around 180,000 quite fast, and we plateaued around that for a couple of years. And so then people was getting to know us in the industry, and then locally people knew who, I set this up with my brother as well, and I'm from a large family. My mum definitely did not have a TV, there's six of us. So a lot of people in Bolton knew who we was anyway. And then because we'd was brought up, I'm going to say poor, we had like free school dinners, free school uniforms. There was all of us living in a three-bed semi. We wasn't like on the breadline, but we didn't really have much money. So yeah, people knew who we was. We was this big family. And they've seen us come from this to then I was living in a nice part of Bolton, and you know, I drove a nice car and all the rest of it. So they were coming to me for advice on business, and a couple of these people who came to me for advice was in construction, and I saw that I was able to help them, so invested in some of these businesses, which is how I ended up with several different companies, by mainly investing in others and then me taking a role of doing the marketing for those businesses.
Is that the part that you enjoy the most, is the marketing side of things?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, where my skill set is. Sales, I just love sales. I love speaking to people. I love meeting people. So it comes quite naturally to me because I just enjoy talking to people. So therefore, it's easy to sell something that you're passionate about. So sales and marketing, the two sides of that is what I enjoy the most. And I do sales and marketing for all of the companies, you know, connecting people and whatnot. So yeah, and I think it's a really important part as well, the marketing, because without that, you struggle to get your pipeline for the sales as well. So I really like money, and you need sales for that. So, I don't know why people be like, oh, this is what I'm passionate about. But I'm passionate about going to the Maldives kayaks.
I've literally just read a post about that as well, like saying, why is there such a taboo about being happy to earn money? Like, that's what everyone's doing it for. They're not working for free.
Exactly. I mean, people will be like, oh gosh, well, you know, I just want to go and save the world. I'm like, you save the world. Don't get me wrong, I do my stuff as well, where I feel like I'm contributing towards humanity. However, what's important for me is to contribute towards my own humans that I developed myself. I mean, I think when you grow up with not an awful lot of money, the fear of getting back to that is what spurs me on more than anything. Thinking like, I never want my children to have to queue up for knickers to go to school. Like, it's embarrassing. I don't want them to have to get tokens for the school dinners. I understand fully that it's needed and I champion it, but I do not want my children to be in that position, because yeah, I didn't like it as a child. So that is what spurs me on every day. It's not just the money. I don't feel comfortable yet that one thing could happen and you just don't know, it might all be taken away, which is why I've continued to work. Yeah. So far into it.
I totally get that though. Like, we had a similar type of background, and like my mum says to me all the time, it's not all about money. I'm thinking, well, yeah, but you, like, I experienced the non-money side of things, and that's exactly what I don't want for the kids. So like, the fear of, yeah, you've done well here, but that might not last forever, so you've got to keep going, you've got to keep improving all the time, because it's like something you can never really truly attain 100%. It's dependent on you working.
And my mum always brought me up to a famous saying to me as a child. So I've got four brothers and a sister, and my sister's 12 years younger than me. So for a long time, I was the only girl there. And my mum was ruthless with me, and I mean ruthless. And she was like, women have to have bigger balls than men in this world to succeed. No, my mum was working like three jobs at the time. My dad's very present, by the way, but they were split up. And so she just drummed it into me that I need independence. She was always like, never rely on a man, because if they walk out on you, you're going to be left with nothing. You need to be able to pay your bills yourself. And she just made me be and understand the importance of being independent. And I'm probably too independent at times, because I've never felt the need, like, I have to get settled down, I have to be in a relationship, because I am so self-reliant. Yeah. If somebody comes into my life now, it's a choice. And I think if I had a daughter, not unfortunately, but I've got two sons, I would do the same with them. Like, you want to be with a partner out of choice, not out of convenience.
Yeah,
and definitely. I think what my mum did for me as a child has been crucial as for me getting older in my business years as well.
Yeah, definitely, because it's instilled, obviously, things that you're not gonna forget in a hurry, but they're so important to keeping you afloat in everything. Like, not depending on a man is so important, because like you say, they can't just get up and leave. And so many people, like, the whole reason I started this podcast is because I think when you've had a baby, they just sort of, people sort of write you off and put you in a box of, oh, well, you'll be working part-time now, or are you still going to be working? Well, yeah, just because I've had a baby doesn't mean that my independence stops. Still got to work, still got to earn my own money.
I think this is so much societal stigmas around this, and responsibilities still on the mother, that it's not, you know, people are like, it's not really a sexist issue. It's a societal problem where it's still, yeah, the mother's going to take the time off, because obviously you need to recover after having a child. I've had a C-section and natural birth. And after the natural birth, I was back into work after 5 days. And after my C-section, I was back in after 7. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. My boyfriend went back to work straight away. So I've got two different dads as well. Yes, I'm one of them, both out of wedlock. And my eldest dad, he didn't work at all for probably the first 5 months of little Harrison being around, because he was a plumber and he was in the midst of a recession. So it was up to me to go to work and earn the money. And I think his pride thing bothered him, but it didn't bother me at all. I was like, well, somebody's got to work, and I don't want him to feel all of this pressure, just like he shouldn't need to stay at home and bloody cue couple pies or whatever. I love my children, but I could not be with them 24/7. I'm not one of them women. And if society wants to look at me like a piece of shit because of it, then crack on, because I'm earning the money. Yeah.
Have you ever cooked an apple pie?
Yeah, I have. The reason I said that is because I cooked it a couple of nights ago.
Oh, did you?
I've actually like baking, despite being in the construction industry. I do also bake.
So. Oh, you've got one up on me. My husband does that as well. I can't bake for shite. How do you find it? Like, how do you deal with, like you just said, they went back to work like really early after having the babies. How do you juggle the motherhood and the work? Like, how do you manage to keep them both afloat?
So I'll be honest with you, at the time, I've never realised how hormonal and stressed and wrapped up in like my hormones and the situation I've been in. It's only been with both of them once my hormones have calmed down that I've looked back and been like, God, I completely wasn't myself. I think at the time I'm just so determined to, you know, I need to make things work. I've got to earn money. I've got to make sure the kids have got something, blah, blah, blah. And I'm so focused on this that I never took time for myself to realise what was happening to me. And with both of them, it's only been upon reflection that I've been like, I really struggled, really, really struggled. With my first son, I had postnatal depression, in that it wasn't that I didn't want to be around him, it's that I was convinced he wouldn't love me. So I couldn't breastfeed. Struggling to produce, so the midwife said to me like, oh, lay him naked on your chest and it helps with bonding. I was obsessed. So I'd finish work and I'd come home and I was like stripping his both off and just trying to do it. And I was only 25 as well, so it's still relatively young, and I just didn't know what I was doing. I think that's probably why I enjoyed working more, because I had control. I knew what I was doing. It was something I was good at. And nobody tells you when you become a mum, like, your head's might fall off, like, and that is fine. Like, you might lose your shit and just be like, what am I doing? And that's all right, but you need to, you know, obviously talk to people about it. And I wasn't very good at that, and so I think I was suffering a little bit, maybe in silence. And afterwards, it was the hormonal thing, once they kind of calmed down, then everything got better and I didn't have any of these concerns anymore. And with my second son, I didn't have postnatal depression, thank God. But I still was focused on work. I still wanted to go into work, but it was a much nicer experience. I enjoyed being a mum that bit more, because I've done it once and I'm like, well, he's still alive. So if I've done it once, I should be able to do it again. So you have a bit more confidence, I think. But yeah, I think there's all kinds of additional pressures that are coming at women. And I cannot tell you some hidden secret that gets you through it. But just like anything in life, it is sheer determination and not giving up. And if you're like me and you don't want to talk about it, then I would advise you to stop that and please do speak to somebody. If it's not somebody, you know, just someone, because I think it's crucial to help you through. You're hormonal, you're working, you've got the babies, you don't perhaps know what is going on. I think it's really important to just have some guidance and somebody to just say, you know what, it's all right to lose your head. It is fine. It is normal for some women. Do not panic about it. But yeah, just be typical British and just crack on.
Yeah, but that's what you do, don't you? Especially when, like, as a new mum, you think, oh my God, everyone else is doing it all right. And everybody else on social media and my mate's being all right. And when you aren't and yours isn't exact, because everyone's journey is different. There's no rules on how to do everything, but you've always got this like expectation that it should just be fine and it should be brilliant. You've got a healthy baby, you're healthy. But especially when you go back to work, I think there's a lot of guilt. Me personally, I felt a lot of guilt when I went back to work, but I knew that I was ultimately doing it for them. So it's sort of weighing up what's more important and what you've got to just crack on with, like you said, and just deal with it, because it's normal to feel guilty, I suppose, and stressed and pressured.
You know what? I never felt guilty, though. That was never an emotion that I had. I never felt guilty. And you've got to think to yourself, does your husband or boyfriend or whoever feel guilty for going to work and earning
money? Oh, no.
So then why on earth should we as women feel guilty about it? I think a lot of it, though, again, is your hormones. Like it massively changed me hugely changed me as a person. And I think I do believe a lot of it's that, but I never felt guilty. I'm never going to feel guilty for going out and trying to provide for my children. Mine was just like a lot of confusion with the first one. And the second one, I didn't feel bad at all. I tried to finish early when I could with the second one and spend a bit more time with him when I could. And that was the reason for starting my company, so I could spend more time with my eldest son, which in the end, it took till he was about one. And then I was able then to pick him up from school every day as well, because I'd laid the foundations for something good. So you shouldn't feel guilty about hopefully what you were going to do in future is allow yourself to have more time with your children. You're sacrificing time when they're born for time when they're older, and yeah, that you should not feel bad about that.
So how would you deal with it day to day then with the boys? Like, do you have a good support network when you're at work, or is it childcare?
Yeah, no, I don't really have a good support network. Everybody in my family works. My mum was a young mum, and everybody in my family works. My sister does that. Everybody does. So my partner lives it down south still. So I have the boys on my own all week, and then every other weekend I go down, and every other weekend he comes up. So in the early days, this started happening from when Grayson was about 3 weeks. So it was hard, because I was doing the night feeds on my own every night and then coming into work like bog-eyed. I had never drunk coffee until I had Grayson in the October, and then from January I had my first cup of coffee. I made a black coffee and let it go cold and just threw it back because it's vile. And from then on I was like, oh my God, what is this secret thing everybody have been doing? And
I've never had coffee.
Well, that's the best way for doing it. If you do it night and then try to run a business, smash a few cold black coffees back. Honestly, I was like, listen, whizzing. So I think coffee is what got me through that time. And then, I had a child minder then. So she used to come to my house. So it was a lot easier. When Grayson turned one, he went to Nishvik. Obviously, my other son's at school now. And then he had after school care. So it's just a matter of juggling. But every night I go and pick them up after work, and I just clock off from work basically from about, I leave at 5:30 until the little one goes to bed around 7:30. So we'll just spend time together, do whatever we're doing. And then I have an hour with my oldest son, and then he'll go on his game or do whatever he's doing for an hour. And then I would generally crack on with some work if needs be, or otherwise I might watch The Crown, which I'm obsessed with, Lady Diana. So
I've heard that's good. Like,
it's just a matter of like finding your routine and just some structure and what works for you. But it's hard, you know, and it's just hard work. Being a mum or a parent and working is just hard. And what is the point in mourning about it? Crack on. If you're really struggling, reach out to people. But I'm not a reacher or a mourner, so I just bustle through it.
You just crack coffee down and get on with it.
Yeah, smash that coffee bar. It's 8 o'clock. Get a couple of wine as well.
What is? I know, obviously, I don't know whether this will be included in the question, but what is your biggest struggle of the journey so far for you? What would you say has been the hardest part of your entire working career? Ooh.
Work-wise?
Work-wise.
So work-wise, I've lost a company. My first company that I set up about 3 years in, because I basically wasn't paying enough tax. I was making tax contributions, but I don't want to blame somebody else because ultimately it all falls down to me. But I didn't know anything about accounts, and I had an accountant doing it who has now been struck off because he was doing terrible jobs for everyone. So I just had a bit of a nightmare. I had to close it down, and at that point I could have just given up and gone working with somebody else, but I remortgaged my house and just thought, you know what, I'm investing in myself, I believe in myself. I didn't have a huge amount of savings. I've just bought this big house as well, which needed renovate, and I was just like, do you know what, there's no point mourning about it again. Like, what is the solution to this problem? Remortgaged the house, got some money back to invest in it again, started again, and then it took me about 4 years to pay off all this tax, but it's all done now.
No way.
Yeah, it was a
Oh my God, what did your head do? Like, I can't, like, touch wood, but how did you feel when that happened?
It slowly unfolded over the course of a couple of months. I got a new accountant because I think I got a fine. It was like a VAT fine or something like that. And I'm like, what's going on here? And there are these bits coming through, and he's like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And I have a friend who's an accountant. I said, can you get somebody to have a look at this? Because I feel like something's not right. He keeps sending me this stuff, and he's gone in and he was like, he's gone in and he's had a look, and he was just like, this is a mess.
It's gone funny there.
It was like, if he was filing like a 10 grand bill and it should have been a 50 grand bill, but I was being advised and paying it, and then it just wasn't getting done, and it wasn't being advised appropriately. So yeah, I just had a nightmare, and there was real stressful nights. Obviously there was times when I just didn't sleep as well, but all I made sure is that we never took out any businesses with us. The only people we owed money back to was the HMRC. But we did, though, in the end, when we closed it down, it was about 150 grand. It was a lot of money. We got it down by about 100. So we took the decision to wrap it up, and then we got into a payment plan to pay it off over years and years, basically. It's all done with now, but yeah, that's the hardest thing to ever come back from. But I think the only time you will fail in business or your career or anything else is when you stop. Obviously, there's going to be a time when you have to look at things and think, yeah, this really isn't working. Like, I had to shut down that business despite doing what I was doing. But if you stop, you're done. If you figure out a solution to the problem that's at hand, then you continue on, then you just can't possibly fail. Just anything in life, like, you've just got to have this determination that's unrivaled, and then I just don't believe that you would ever be unsuccessful.
When we went on our honeymoon to Jamaica, and honestly, that's their motto is no problem, man. That's it, over and over again. And everything I got, like, when I first arrived there, I was basically piss and blood. I had a really bad kidney infection when I got there, so I was all inclusive, dream holiday, couldn't drink, couldn't have sex, couldn't get in the pool. And it was like day one of the honeymoon. I was like, are you for real? Like, is this real life? And I remember my husband had booked me in at the hotel to get, like, something done to my feet, because I was just, like, traumatized. And I was telling the woman, and she stopped and looked at me and went, are you healthy? Have you got healthy children? Have you just got married? I was like, yeah. She went, so what's the problem? Find a solution, work around it. And I was like, you're right. Like, literally nothing in life is worth mourning or worrying about, because you can always find a solution and make it better. It's just getting your head out your ass and doing it.
100%. So I always say this, like, there's two people in life. There's those who focus on the problem, and there's those who focus on the solution. And if you're focusing on the solution, you'll get through it. And it's not going to go according to plan. Your solution will end up maybe being 10 different solutions along the way. But if that is what you're focused on, and you're not focusing on, like, poor me, oh my God, all this happening to me. Everybody deserves a moment to have a meltdown. Don't get me wrong. Like, you're fully entitled to that. Yes. But at some point, get over it.
Yeah.
And like, even if you're not going to get over it, just fucking deal with it. Sort yourself out. Find the solution, because nothing is insolvable. Maybe there's a couple of equations out there, but in real life, nothing is unsolvable. I was told at the age of 19 I'd never have children, and now I'm sat with two children. I genuinely believe that that's just happened because I'm fully determined. That doesn't mean
literally.
I just am not one for giving up. I believe in the power of the mind and of getting you through situations.
Oh, 1,000,000%. A positive outlook changes everything in life. People, you can spot, I honestly think, you can spot a negative person a mile off. Because literally everything that you've just said there, it's always, oh, this, oh, that. And you're like, right, but look at this. Look at it this way instead. Like, where are you getting focusing on the negative all the time? It's just bringing everybody down, including yourself.
It's just not, the thing is, it isn't going to achieve anything. If you were telling somebody a problem to try and come up with a solution, fair enough. If you were just telling the problem over and over and over again, all you were doing is talking about what is wrong. Like, that is, it's no way to live your life. You've got to be talking about what's wrong to get to an end result of where you want to be. And that's what you need to be focusing on and telling people. And I don't want to be like some spiritualist, but manifesting it and all that, yes. You know.
Yeah, look, oh, you can't see. I've got me manifestation behind that board. All the light. I just like vision boards and things. I think if you can see it, you can believe it. You've just got to get it and go for it. That's it.
100%, definitely.
Tell me a little bit about The Apprentice then. What was that like? Like, what was it like getting to that last bit? How did you get over that? Was that hard to get over? Or did you just think, well, I got this really close and I did mint?
Oh, no, yeah, I didn't. I wasn't it keeps doing a delay. Can you see that? Right. So I'm like, oh. Yeah, I wasn't disappointed at all. I was absolutely buzzing. Before I went in, I had said to my mum, oh, God, imagine, not much anybody should have known, but obviously I told Arthur Bullen. I was like, oh, my God, can you imagine?
NDA.
NDA sign, went straight out of the window as soon as they had a wine. I'm like, guess what? I'm going in Apprentice. I was like, imagine if I can do 4 weeks on TV. Obviously, I'm a marketing person. I'm like, this is mega exposure. They get like 8 million viewers or whatever. So, I wasn't disappointed at all. I was completely like humbled to have even been considered to get on. But then to have got as far as what I did, I was I just couldn't believe it. Like, to me, people see like all different versions of you of what they want to see. I won't be in my head the person that you see. And so for me, I'm just like this girl from Bolton who was brought up with not an awful lot of money, really not that many prospects and not much belief from other people that I would ever achieve anything. And there I was on The Apprentice talking to all these like billionaires and then talking about my businesses, what I had, and then, you know, like reliving successful things. I'm just like, oh my God, like this is, it didn't feel real. I felt like I was watching myself, which in the end I was, but I felt like I was like watching myself. It was just a very surreal, humbling, amazing experience. Yeah, I loved every minute of it. I don't think it's an experience that I would ever get the opportunity to do again. So I knew that at the time, so I really lived it up and tried to enjoy myself whilst whilst hopefully winning, but that wasn't to be.
Please tell me, is it, I don't believe that you can get ready cars over here in 20 minutes and you friggin' look, you go from looking like dragging out of bed to absolute like celebrities. Is that real life?
100% it's true. So,
shut up!
Honestly, it's true. The first day that we was there, everybody stayed up late. And my mum, I'm a nightmare if I don't have my sleep. So my mum was like, make sure you get to bed early. So I've gone to bed at like 9 o'clock and everybody stayed up, like dicking about and being all like exhibitionist downstairs. I'm like, I'm sleeping. They woke us. Some people went to bed at like 12:30, 1 o'clock. They got us up at 2 o'clock in the morning and when the car's going to be here in 20 minutes. So where everybody is, and then there was 18 of us at first in the house, plus 5 producers as well lived with us. So everybody's screaming around, trying to get in the show, trying to get ready. It probably was longer that one, to be fair, because we just weren't ready. But they stopped the girls from doing the makeup. So
no way.
Yeah, so in the end, what we ended up doing was, you plan out the night before and you say, right, I'll have showers tonight, you have the showers in the morning. The boys had a floor and the girls had a floor, so, and there was a couple of showers. So we'd be like planning out who's going to use the showers when, and then you'd get ready, get dressed, go downstairs, grab some breakfast, which you take with you, and then you do your makeup when you're in the car. So if you, I mean, you won't sit next to me, I'm telling you anymore, but when everybody's leaving the house, you know, that walk they do to the vans, no girls have the makeups on then. And then afterwards, everybody's like glowing because you'll probably be for an hour driving somewhere. So everybody wipes the makeup on in the car. But yeah, they literally.
Oh my God, I'm gobsmacked at that.
Yeah, no, it's
I thought that was just like a TV thing, like, oh, really, they've been set up for the last 2 hours contouring, because you all look like proper, like flawless all the time. And I thought, there's no way they've got ready that good in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I did look flawless. There was days when I would just like absolutely die. I cannot go on national TV like this, but what can you do? You just, I don't think at that point. There's a couple who really cared about how they looked, but the more like driven women, obviously men don't do the makeup, although James did a bit, the more driven women wasn't really the arse. It was just like, oh, get us out of the house, and like, let's crack on.
What is he like though in real life, Lord Sugar? Does he have that like presence that he has on TV? Is he not as like?
Yeah, I was really scared when I met him. I went in there to help battle anxiety, which worked. I was having lots of panic attacks every day, and I've only ever had one since leaving there, which is because I had some paracetamol with caffeine in when I had an hangover. My head fell off and I had a panic attack, so it can't really count. But before that, I was having loads of panic attacks, and I went in, I've not had one since. So I was really anxious and dead nervous the whole time, and he knew that, and he was really, really nice to me. But with some people, especially when they was cocky and that, he just did not have it. Yeah, he would really have a go at people, like, especially off camera as well. He'd be like, I'm just going to say this, watch your language, da da da. I always swore like a trooper, obviously Northern, and he knew that, and he was kind of aiming it at me in a passive-aggressive way, but telling Andrew, who also swore laws, but then would have a glance at me, and I was thinking, please don't shout it at me, I might cry. Yeah, and they listened into the cars, and I didn't know, and what, this one day, I was like effing and blinded, because we're not on camera then, so I'm just like having a laugh with mates, and I'm like, oh, effing and blinded, and then the producer who was sat in the front of the van was like, Michaela Clon's listening, and he's asked if you can please curb your language. I was like, oh my fucking God.
Oh my God, I bet you wanted your arsehole to swallow you up.
Oh, I just was like, oh, I can't believe this. And then we all got done for swearing. I was like, oh.
I think there's something about in me. I've got a little crush on Lord Sugar.
Do you know what? He's a really, really, really nice man as well. So since the show, I've emailed him a couple of times, and he's always happy to help you with contacts and connections if he can. If he could do business with somebody who'd been on The Apprentice, he would. Like if he found it, and he's not like a mentor, but he will. If you say, can you help me with this? You know that he would help you with it. Like,
oh, that's nice.
Claude is just like second to none. He's just such an amazing, generous, beautiful man. I cannot even describe. He's recently took the time, Claude had blood cancer, and he's recently taken the time to speak to one of my friends who's suffering from a form of blood cancer, and has helped him with some guidance and information on how he got over it, and some steps to take. And I'm just forever, it makes me a bit emotional thinking about it, I'll just forever be grateful, because a man like that is so busy, really doesn't need to be calling people up who he's never met before. You know, we just rung him up and was on the phone for like 20 minutes and said, please stay in touch. He's just,
bless him.
Amazing man.
Bless him. He is nice, old Claude. He does come across, he comes across like he's trying to, he's a bit of a softie. Yeah.
He's like a bit cheeky. He's always like, tries to be stern, but then he's always
going to. And you'll see him do this, go like do that. I used to love it when you see him do that, like face like this, it made me laugh. So yeah. If obviously everything you've achieved just been absolutely incredible, like, to be fair, like, unbelievable, especially I didn't know that your company is obviously closed down and you had to start again, but if your children, so if your boys could learn anything from you, what would it be?
I would hope that they would be good providers for whenever they have a family, to have respect for women and to ensure that they're happy, to get the work-life balance. I believe that throughout most of my career, I've been fortunate enough to have that. I've always had I'm clocking off now. And even if I have to pick up on something when the kids have gone to bed, I've had a work-life balance. Before this bloody lockdown, we would go away on like weekends away and proper holidays, maybe 6 times a year, and then little breaks in England. I've been really, really, really incredibly fortunate, but I've always made a conscious effort to spend time with my family and to ensure that, you know, I see my mates, I go to the gym or whatever it is to make me happy, because what is the point in having a ton of money and then just being miserable? You want to do stuff, don't you? So, I would want them to have a strong work ethic, to provide for the children and to just be happy if possible.
Yeah. Happiness, obviously money helps, but you need to be happy with your money, otherwise what's the point in it?
I mean, my son keeps telling me he wants to be a plumber because his dad's a plumber, and I've seen his struggles that his dad had, and I'm like, no issues with it, but why don't you try and be like the prime minister or something? Like, break that habit. I was like, right, you can be a plumber then, but you're starting your own business. So I'm like trying to force him to greatness, and he's like, I want to be my dad's apprentice.
I'll soon grow out with that once he sticks his hand down the toilet.
Yeah, well, this is it. And he has a couple of bad experiences on the side. Then he'll be like, oh, I want to be a doctor.
Yeah. I said to Jackson, my elder sister, I said, do you still want it? He wants to be a footballer. Want to be a footballer, yeah. Oh, if I can't be a footballer, I want to be... I want to own a sweet factory. I was thinking, what a random thing to want to do. But I was thinking, at least he wants to own the sweet factory instead of work at it. So I can't really argue with that.
He wants all the sweeties, that's fine. Yeah.
So if anyone, because obviously I know you don't know we spoke before, but about you do a lot of work for like the women in construction and things. If people want to find you or see what you're a part of and the awareness you're creating, especially for women in construction, where will they find you at?
Yeah, so all my, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn. I'm most active on LinkedIn and Instagram, just Michaela Wayne on LinkedIn, Michaela Wayne 1 on Instagram. But we give out loads of tips and support as a business when it comes to marketing. I will literally teach you how to market your own company if you can afford to invest in using us as an agency. So I'm always putting this stuff on there, and especially if there are any women in construction listening to this and they are struggling with anything, they need advice on anything, mentorship, feel free to get in touch, because I'm more than happy to help. I am an ambassador for women in construction for the National Federation of Builders, and it's something I'm really passionate about, to raise the equality in the industry, rather than having 1% of women on tools to get that to around 10%, so there's some kind of equality on the side.
Oh God, I seen that post you did the other day on Instagram about the wage difference.
Yeah, the gender pay gap.
Unbelievable.
And it's like hundreds of men telling me about how I'm wrong, and I'm like, okay, how I'm wrong, because they once read an article. I'm like, this is my life, man. I've been doing this for 15 years.
Oh, don't.
About it every month in my national magazine. I consider it, and you're gonna come on here and tell me you googled the stat in the last 2 minutes and I'm wrong. And on top of that, I interview women every single month to feature in our magazine, so I know that the struggles are real and there's such thing as a glass ceiling still in the industry. And I mean, I'm not saying that, oh, it's just men. I'm saying we need to attract more women to this industry, so we need to go to the next generation, be in schools, be present, and for them to, as you were saying about you become what you see. If young girls, instead of them, I got doing public talks at these schools, and these young girls are telling me they want to be hairdressers or nail technicians, because that's like their aspirations at these schools, you know, when they've been expelled from everywhere else, they go to these. And the boys are all like, oh, you know, I want to work in construction, be a plumber or something. So I go into the school and I'm like, listen, hairdressers, yeah, a nail technician, they can earn a wage when you work for yourself. Trust me though, in construction, you can have a custody job working for somebody else, be a plumber, and you're going to get a load of money. So why don't you have it as a consideration? So young girls need to be seeing other role models, other women in construction, taking the time to go and speak to them.
Yeah, because like you say, if you create more awareness about it, it becomes something that, you know, they could see themselves doing at the moment, really, like, I know when I was growing up, I'd never seen any women in construction. It's almost like oh my God, is that a woman? Is there a woman who works there? Like my husband's a crane operator, and he come across a female crane operator, and it was like, oh my God, there was a woman crane operator. And I was like, oh my God, really? Does she not have a penis? And he was like, no, but I've never seen one before. And I was like,
no, it is like such a foreign thing at the minute, which I'm trying to help to break that. And again, it's a societal issue, people thinking that women don't want to do it. Well, hold on. Maybe if you told women about it, how much fun these jobs are, how much money are in them, how accessible they are, how the industry is suffering from a massive skill shortage. And it's going to be worse when we actually leave the EU as well, because we're not going to be able to get members of the EU to come into England and do it. So the industry is really going to suffer. So these big organisations need to be taking the time to go to school and to approach and headhunt women from other industries and get them into construction. And I think there's been huge changes already, but I think over the next decade, we're going to see some massive changes in the stats that are currently out there. Because it's embarrassing. 13% of women, 13% of the construction industry is women, which is like 30% less than any other industry. 30% less than all workers, and only 1% of those are actually on the tools and on the site. And, you know, people are saying, oh, well, because they choose not to. And I'm like, no, it's not. It isn't just because of that. A lot of it will be, but it's also site culture. I know women who have worked on sites and they've left because of the way that the men on the site are speaking to them. So there's a lot of problems that basically need to be changed. And that is my gift back to the world, my big fat mouth fighting for women's rights in construction.
I was going to say, I'm sure they'll get there, like, in the next 10 years, if you're forefront in it.
That's it, I am.
Well, thank you so much for today. Honestly, I'm really, really buzzing you come on. And I know there'll be a hell of a lot of people who'll be listening who you'll be able to inspire and relate to what you've gone through. So thank you for taking the time to speak to me and to the listeners. All right.
No problem. Yeah, it's been great. Thank you, Carla.
You have been listening to the Money Making Mothers podcast with Carla Edwards. If you have enjoyed the show, then leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Make sure to tune in next time, and don't forget, you can have it all.